is there any sense at all in which, as some Catholic documents say, there's a preferential option for the poor in the scriptures? Any sense at all in which God has some special concern for the poor? The other two questions are more what should we do questions, which I think is what we're mostly wanting to focus on. And the first one is a very simple question. How much should we spend on ourselves? And how much should we spend on ourselves? And how do you know the answer to that? There are 1 billion people at least in the world who have annual incomes of about $50 a year at the price of a good pair of hiking shoes, or not even a very good one as a matter of fact, just a very modest pair of hiking shoes. Should one buy a pair of modest hiking shoes or a good pair if you know that you could use that money to feed a person for a year, or for 2 years, or two persons for a year? How do you know whether or not to buy a double dip sundae, as I did last night? And I also bought a double dip one for my wife. My kids are in the line, if you notice out there. And then the third question is, how much should we spend within our own congregations, and how much in the larger world? Most of our congregations, I suspect, spend anywhere between 85 to 95% of our budget on our own congregation. Do we need more glass cathedrals or even more modest church construction at a time when 3 billion people have never heard about Jesus? We spend in the U.S. About $1 billion a year in sharing the gospel around the world. That's the same amount we spend in chewing gum. But, you know, that builds up congregation by congregation. And how much should we spend in your congregation, in mine? Well, those are my three questions.
Okay, I'm going to ask us to spend a little time on the theological issue first, because I think it helps inform. That's my bias. So, it's free form. Does God have a preferential option for the poor? And if so, what makes you feel? What would make you give a positive answer, or what would make you say no? God does not have a preferential option for anyone. God is totally equal in God's concern.
Equal in his concern for everybody. But I think the wealthier you are, the more you are lukewarm. And you can't do anything with it.
Since several people just walked in, let me tell you where we are and what we're doing. We are discussing world hunger. What can we do about it? Or can we do anything about it? And Ron has posed three questions, which I put up on the board. The first one, a theological question, which we're going to start with, is this. Is God on the side of the poor? Otherwise stated, does God have special concern for the poor or preferential option, as some liberation theologians say? Then the second question is, how much should we spend on ourselves? And Ron gave the example of one with the amount of money it might take for one to buy a modest new pair of hiking boots. This would provide a month's food for a year's food for some third world persons. So when do we have enough? And how do we know when we have enough? How do we answer those questions in as rich Christians in a hungry world? And then the third question is, how much should a congregation invest its budget in its in itself, the new organ, the new paint job, the whatever.
Pastor salary.
Pastor salary. As compared to, should a congregation make a commitment to a certain percentage of that budget is going to be spent outside of the congregation, and keep trying to increase that amount. So we thought we'd tackle the first question first, and the style of the forum tonight is I'll facilitate it to keep everybody that wants to have a chance to talk talking, and ask you to just jump right in. Does God have a preferential option for the poor? We had one response. God loves us all equally and has concern for all persons, and it's out of God's concern that God can't will be concerned about the rich who out of their richness become lukewarm Christians. That's not a sign that God doesn't care about people. But does God have a preferential option for the poor is the question, or special concern for the poor? Is there evidence in the scriptures that God does?
Seems to me that God doesn't, he loves all his create creatures equally. However, in the poor, there's a great need there, like the parable of the Good Samaritan, you know, who helped that person in need out. That's the kind of God we have, channels his love and action towards those in need, and the poor are in great need. And we, as Christian people, I have to listen to that and do something about that. So in a way, no, he doesn't, not on sides, but in a way, yes, because that's where the need is. And as God loves and cares, like in the Good Samaritan parable, that's what he calls me to do too, to prefer the poor. And that's why I'm here tonight, because I want to find out more about that and how to do that.
Thank you.
Perhaps some of it is because the poor are aware of their need for God and therefore can be more open to him. Sometimes we're so self-sufficient that we are not as open to God as we might be if we had more awareness of our need for him.
Okay. Other thoughts on...
Perhaps if we think of God as Father and mankind as family, in a family, if you have a child who is ill or has a problem, you do give them more care until they are over their problem. And so maybe in that way, at this point in time, God is showing, although he loves each of us equally, he's showing more care where he's needed more.
Right? Do we?
You know, I don't know, maybe I'm I just think it's that, as they've been mentioning, the more that they, you're more self-sufficient, so it's hard for God to work with you because you just say, I don't need you. But I think whether you have, wealth is not necessarily a blessing.
Okay.
And your needs can be the same as a, your spiritual needs are the same as a poor person.
You're pointing out to us that we may be poor in spirit, even though we may be rich in material things.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to push you all a little further to ask you, do you see scriptural evidence that God has shown or evidenced a special concern for the poor and oppressed?
Isn't it the Peter to Paul says, remember the poor here in Jerusalem, the people in need, don't just go off evangelizing, but encourages him to keep things in balance.
Okay, there's a good example.
I think the Old Testament prophets are full of concerns for the poor, and I desire mercy, not sacrifice, and showing concern for the poor and justice. There is special children that kind of comes through.
I've heard of Christ being especially present in the poor, that Christ's presence is there. And I haven't heard much more scripture backing that up or where that comes from. That's new to me.
Okay. In a minute, I'm going to turn to our resource person here and ask him to give us his view of his own question. But I want to nudge you all to have you been attending the Isaiah sessions, for example? Have you heard anything there that suggests God's special? Help us out then with what you think of your question.
Yeah, I think that there was a lot of common agreement that moves very much in the way that I would want to put it. I think that the scriptures say quite clearly that God is not biased. He cares equally about everyone. But it seems to me that if you look at the way you and I tend to act, or if you look at the way the rich and powerful in all the societies that we study in history tended to act, we always tend to be a lot more concerned about ourselves. Powerful always are a lot more concerned with themselves than they are with the poor. And so by contrast with the way we normally act, namely very selfishly, God looks very biased. All right. And I think there's a very, very strong sense in which, in the scriptures, God tells us in all kinds of ways that he is concerned that the poor, the weak, the oppressed, the people that have no power, that are trampled on, whether it's orphans, widows, women, that those are the folk that Jesus moves toward to stand with and to lift up. And I think we could quote just hundreds and hundreds of verses which say very, very strongly that God and his people must be on the side of the poor in the sense that they are demanding justice for all and the poor don't have justice.
I'd like to ask a direct question at you or anyone related to that. In fact, many
many of the poorest, and in fact where the Christian church is growing the most rapidly right now, are in third world countries. So it isn't as if Christians were not among those who are the poorest of the poor. So part of our concern for the poor is concern for brothers and sisters in Christ, not to mention the extended human community.
Yeah, I think it's the case that the poor are more open to hearing the gospel than the rich who are self-sufficient. To put it the way Jesus does, riches are dangerous. They're not evil. They're good, as a matter of fact. The abundance of the material order is good. Christianity is not ascetic. It's great to be here in Holden Village. It's a fantastic place. You have to have quite a lot of money to be here. But it's by contrast with most of the world. But it's good. It's not evil in any sense at all. And that's kind of a simple sign of material possessions generally. But they're dangerous because one can rest in the security that they provide rather than trust in God. One can trust in oneself rather than throw oneself on God's mercy. That's true. So it's the case that the poor regular, they're more open to the gospel than the well-off.
Yes.
How does this fit in with the hierarchy of need, where you have your basic preoccupation with, your daily bread or your shelter or whatever, so that you aren't free maybe to respond on a higher level? How does that all work, or does that just negate maybe that field of thought?
Well, I don't think it's the case that you can't become a Christian when you're hungry. They do all the time. It's tragedy that there are people that are hungry, and certainly if you're sharing the gospel and don't also share food, you're denying the gospel. But there are people who are starving, who love the Lord, and are Christians. And so I want to be careful at that point.
But how do you answer those people that say that a person can't concentrate on the Word of God on an empty stomach?
Well, it's partly true and partly not true. If the conclusion from that statement is we've got to spend the next decade focusing all our attention on justice and peace and relief and development and shouldn't spend any or much time on evangelism, then it's wrong, theologically and practically. But if the conclusion is that it's a ghastly denial of Christian faith to say to a hungry person, here's Jesus' forgiveness, and then go on and let the person hungry, then it's very, very right. And there certainly are. Are situations where the tornado's gone through or whatever, and you certainly spend these days making sure people don't starve. But it's not true that poor people cannot come to faith.
Can you repeat his question? I didn't hear.
I merely posed the question that there are those that say that in order to reach a person with the gospel, that he must have a full stomach or something similar to it, or go in with health aids, and I'm talking about missionary fields now, things of that nature, that the best way to reach them is to feed them first.
There was
And there may be something to that, I don't know, that's not my statement.
But we certainly should minister to the whole person. I have no doubt that the best way to share the whole biblical faith is to do it in a holistic way.
Yeah, where we've got a chicken and egg situation.
Where we minister to the full needs of people, and that includes their need to hear about the fantastic love of God, which is shown at the cross, and it's also the fantastic news of God's on the side of the poor, and he wants the poor to be able to be empowered to stand on their own feet and in their own ways, so that the tragedy of poverty is no longer destroying people's lives.
There certainly has been, there have been times in even in recent years when there have developed great debates around social ministry as compared to church growth and evangelism and all kinds of things written and conferences held and conventions held. But I hear you saying, let's commit ourselves to a holistic mm-hmm. approach and not say that either is less important. Any more comments on the first question, which is the theological kind of laying out of?
I have a question, but it's a very big question that I have been having this in my mind for a very long time. And I think this is a good opportunity. So I have to tell a few things about myself first before I ask the question. Okay. I was born in a Jewish home, but no religion whatsoever. So I was brought up without any religion education. But I feel within myself that I am a very religious person without the having ever studied it. I am religious inside, within myself, in my heart, in my mind. And I feel extremely much for the poor, for the animals, for the helpless, for everything that needs help. Mm-hmm. And I have the impression that it's a human, the man, obligation with the hunger in the world. I am too emotional. Rather than expecting it from God or Jesus Christ or what? Because I feel that the poor are poor because they are very, very ignorant. They need to be educated. They bring children, babies into the world without even knowing how they became pregnant. Many of them don't. It's just like animals, you know. And how? That's what we have to be concerned about, is to concern with the education of the very poor people. They have to know what's going on with them. I think it's a man's concern. Man's, I think it has to come from us. If you are going to expect it from God, has a concern so huge, because our earth is so minuscule. The whole universe is so huge. God is the whole universe. I don't think he's concerned with, if you have, with material thing, you know, if you have 10 cars or something, if you have anything. This is not his concern. It's we know that. We are concerned because we feel that this is, because we have so much and we see others having so little, that's why we are concerned. That's why we feel, put it, because we see the difference. You see, I was brought up in a very, very country with so much distinct difference. There are very wealthy people and extremely poor. I mean, really poor people. Here in this country, if you think you are poor, you are not. You are almost considered well-to-do in Brazil if you you compare with the poor here. They are extremely poor, but they are also because they never had opportunity to ever know anything what's going on in the world. They don't know if there are other countries in the world. They don't know that there are other different languages. They don't know what education. They can't read or write. You know. So I don't know, there's much more to it, but I am extremely concerned about hunger in the world, but I think it's man's obligation to take care of that. Because what did, until now, God do to solve this problem? I would like to know about Jesus Christ. It's getting worse.
I think that your question is, and your statement is a good one for us to hear. For one thing, it reminds us, as I think we need to be reminded, that in our concern for justice, we link hands with other people of all faith and of no faith. In this, it is true, this is a humanitarian concern as well as a Christian concern. Do you want to address the concern directly now? Or ask.
Let me try just for 3 minutes, realize. I mean, a huge set of.
But we're both here all week for you to
things.
Talk.
I would want to say 2 basic sets of things. One is, it seems to me that if the prophets tell us anything, the Jewish prophets tell us anything, they tell us that the questions of fairness and justice in our world are God's concern. And they're not just a human concern. In fact, in some basic level, the reason they are so pressing for us is because God made the world, it's God's world, and He cares about fairness and justice. Now, that doesn't mean that we do nothing and just sit back and pray or run through our liturgies. It means that, in fact, we work our heads off. But we do it finally because it's God's concern. The other kind of cluster of questions that I hear you raising really are around the question, what causes poverty? Why are people poor? And I think that's an enormously complex question, and there isn't one reason. I think some people are poor for the reasons you pointed to. Some people are poor because they're lazy. And they've made lousy choices about drugs and alcohol, and having children, and so on. And the response to that is a better worldview, I think, myself, a Christian one. I think that other people are poor because there's just been a tornado or some other natural disaster, and they need immediate relief. Other people are poor because they don't have the right technology. Somehow we've developed new technology, they haven't, and so they remain in poverty. And what we need to do in that case is to share new technology. Other people are poor because people with a lot of power oppress them. We go on and talk about lots of examples. I could talk about examples from rural India where large landowners oppress poor peasants, or I could talk about U.S. multinational corporations and Brazil and Central America, when that's the problem, when a very wealthy elite in Brazil or Central America has lots of land and won't share it, so most people can't earn their own way, then the solution is to change that unjust structure. So there are lots of causes of poverty, and it's not just the wrong choices of poor people, it's quite frequently the sinful choices of rich and powerful people.
Okay. I'm going to move us on. Your question is one that we should continue to talk about in the village, you with others, you with everyone. But because it's already 20 to 10 as facilitator, I'm going to ask us to move to the second question so that we get some time on what can we do about it. And the second question is, how much should we spend on ourselves, and how can we know how much we should spend on ourselves? Let me throw that out to the group.
There's also a sub one that I would like to add in there. If you decide that you think you should spend more for the hungry and your husband says, you know, if there's a conflict within the marriage as to one's becoming very aware of hungry people and the other one not,
okay, we'll keep that there to be brought in also. The primary question here is how do we make decisions? How do we go about deciding of the richness that we have? How much of it should we be spending on ourselves? How much of it is really ours?
That's so hard for me to answer because of the way I'm brought up in such a consumer society. Mm-hmm. And this is just hearing these kind of questions is so good. But how much is ours? You know, as a Christian person, it's not 10% really is God's, but everything mm-hmm. I feel that I have is God's, and to be returned back. In the hymn, you know, our time, our talent, our possessions, all gifts from God, to balance that out, and how do I return that? And I want to throw something else in here for me. Another question that raised for me is our churches. How much are we spending on ourselves, and how much, when I tithe, it's actually going to help the needs, or am I paving the church parking lot, you know, which doesn't need paving?
and that's the third question that's up there.
Okay.
How much should we spend on ourselves, and how do we arrive at some kind of a formula for that?
If you tithe to the church and they spend the money with paving of the church parking lot or sending it away, it's done what it's supposed to do for you. You tithe, then the church now has the question of what do they do with the 10%.
I think we're making some stinky decisions.
I'm going to try to keep us to the second question because I think we're popping out of I have one friend, a Catholic sister, who owns two dresses. They both look exactly alike. You don't know which of the two she's wearing. It's not a habit. I mean, it's not a habit, but she has two black dresses. And she has one pair of shoes and one change of underclothes. Were you at the pastor's retreat, Jim, when she was there? Her self-discipline is that two complete changes of clothing and one pair of shoes is enough for her to have. And she has experienced that to be such a freeing thing in her life. That's her answer to this. How much should I have? What she needs is one change of clothes. Now, that's one end of the continuum. I guess Mother Teresa and all of the women who work with her have one change of clothes, for example. What along this continuum, how do we decide? Because as you said, What is your name, please?
Joe.
As Joe said, we live in a consumer society which tells us every moment of our life that we need more. We need everything in order to be smarter, more sexy, more intelligent, get better jobs. We need more.
Don't shop at Sears. You got to shop at the expensive place and get the designer jeans.
I see your hand. Are there any others before I call on you?
Okay.
Try it. How much is enough? And how do you decide on that? Yes.
I think it's something that each person or each family has to prayerfully consider and decide what our eye is at this point in time. And for some, it might be one change of clothes. Mm-hmm. Or another way to look at it, it would be to what could we do without? What is something that we don't need that we could share with others? I know in our family we have a large house and our children are grown. And so one way we could share with others, if someone needs a sister, they are welcome to stay with us. It is a way.
Yes,
we need to each decide on our own way that's right for us.
Okay.
And follow through.
May I ask a question at that point? Is there nothing that the Catholic sister has to say to the family that spends $100,000 a year on themselves?
Much. But are they ready to listen if they spend $100,000 a year on themselves?
Well, that's a different question from the ethical question of how much both of them ought to spend.
Right.
Which I think is what we're asking.
Yes.
I have three teenagers, and you know, I mean, I have debts. You remember when you had teenagers or whatever? When they were younger, I was probably building a pretty good equity, different things, my home, and you know, just as I go along. But now they're up on one close to college age. Educational opportunities, things like that. I have just seen how much money I could spend and not think that I was doing something that was not needed. So maybe the time in your life as, I mean, I don't know how to decide. I've thought of that question before, but I've seen that my daughter had an educational opportunity in Europe this summer. It costs a lot of money, I mean, but I thought it was a great opportunity. How do you make those decisions when it's your own kid?
You are describing the dilemma, and you're doing it well. Let's keep other, you know, everybody chime in here as we sort of confront the dilemma of it.
That's an embarrassing question.
Mm-hmm.
I can't answer
that. Sure, is it, you know, we shouldn't feel guilty to amass an estate so that we could then not become a burden to society, or so that we can send our children to the best schools. I mean, I sent my daughter to PLU, and that cost twice as much money to send my sons to the University of Washington. But I felt, you know, that was the best thing to do with the money. Maybe I could have sent more to World Hunger, but you know, you make the decisions every day as you go along.
Yes.
I don't have so much trouble in deciding whether or not I should spend it on educational opportunities, because I figure that is enriching and helping the person to grow. But where I have problems is, how much money do I spend on pleasure? How often do I go to the movies and spend $10 instead of sending it to the World Hunger? How much, you know, like the hiking boots, do I buy the more expensive hiking boots? Or do I make do with tennis shoes and send that to World Hunger? How much of our income do I spend on my pleasure? You know, education to me is a necessity. I know to a hungry, starving person, it's not a necessity. My dilemma is in, you know, how much do we save for old age, and how much, you know,
okay,
do we buy the new car instead of hanging on with the old car?
We're describing the dilemma.
A few different comments. One direct answer, we should not spend on ourselves more money than our pastors spend on themselves. To some of us, that would be somewhat limiting, since there's some good number of us, myself included, who earn more than our home pastor. Actually, in this day and age, somebody bought a house recently, that may not be possible, but then again, that's a goal. And if you set a goal and find a way to go work towards it, I believe one can get there. We also get into values on do we individually need 10 changes of clothing, 15 changes of clothing, 5 business suits, 10 party dresses, partridge in a pear tree. Do we need to send our kids to Stanford University, PLU, whatever? or can they go to City College or whatever the freebie is? You know, what is a necessity to one is an option, is a luxury to another. I think we each need to look at that. I think we also, specifically, I think what we do is we need to look at where we're spending our money and track it, and then say, ah, I now have an option of cutting back in the following categories, choose those categories, and cut back in those categories, then I have an option to do something else with the money, as presumably I'm living within my income versus expense ratio is matching, I'm living within my income level. Tangent on that, by the way, if one isn't living within one's income level, then track it carefully and cut back, because one can, at least in this country. And then when I end up with spending less than what I'm earning, then I have an option. Yes, world hunger is one. Give it to the church and let church council decide where it goes. Spend the money towards the Great Commission, go and evangelize to the people, which is, I think, a high priority job of ours as Christians.
You've described one kind of system of taking a look at where can one begin to divert some of the budget in some other ways. Thank you. Any other comments from
Tom here? Something that I think two major things is this kind of the magnitude of the effort. You know, you'd say we are giving to the poor and starving countries because we have it to give. Why do we have it to give? Because of the economy. Maybe it's our high standard of living. I have no doubts and no pomp we should be giving. The question is to bring them to a level where they're self-sufficient. What does it take? Does it take 80% of our original, 50% of our resources, 20? What does it take to do that? And, you know, if you were bringing our society down to a very low subsistence level, say we were to go that far, then we would not be able to give anymore. And if they hadn't made it by then, it's too late. They'll never make it. They'll all starve to death. And particularly when the population increases. You know, in fact, people had gone over there and had induced medical practices that saved babies. And many, many were living now. Now what was happening, they were building slums around the cities. Now you have to go attack the slums and get the slums out of there and give them jobs, create industries, do all those things. And it's a very, you know, it's a complex problem. And a lot of these questions have to be answered.
Thank you. If you can tie some of that together, we will have a few minutes for you. How would you answer question two?
I find question two abominably difficult. I happen to have two teenagers. One's in Christian college, and another will be after next year. And the third one is daughter who's 10 going on 13. So I feel all of these things intensely. I certainly feel with the brother back there. I can't believe how much more money we seem to need now than just a very few years ago. The only way I have come to, well two things. I feel very clear that I know the direction we're supposed to go. We're supposed to spend less on ourselves, almost all of us, significantly. But when it comes to saying how we figure out how much that is, I know of no nice formula for doing that. The only thing that I've been able to come up with is a process. And it seems to me that the process is something like this. It's a matter of putting together all of these things in the decision. It's a matter of listening very hard to the scriptures. And the very radical things they say about God's concern for the poor. And God's demand to be sure with. Another thing is to read the newspaper in the world and to really listen to what the needs of the poor are. And another thing is to really pray hard and to listen to the Spirit and ask for God's guidance. Another thing is to do that by listening to other brothers and sisters. I really think that we want to do this in an individualistic way, and that's not right. I think that it's not just me and my family who all by ourselves should be making this decision. I think we need to listen to especially poor brothers and sisters. And we can do that either by being in congregations where they're there, or we can do it by getting our missions agencies and relief and development agencies to help us know what poor folk in other countries feel. So it's that process, listening to the Bible, the newspaper, praying, and expecting the guidance from the Lord, and doing all that in the context of the worldwide body of Christ, as well as our local congregation, so we're listening to the poor as well as. And when we do that, I think we'll increasingly get clear. If we really had to defend this vacation or this new car to a poor peasant whose kids didn't even know how to read and didn't have any hope of that, things would look very different. I don't know if I could continue having my son go to a Christian college where it costs $10,000 roughly a year. I don't know. I struggle with that.
Yeah.
But that's the process I would point to.
Thank you. Let me just give you one personal example. If you find yourself in a situation, which I did, with four children to raise alone on my own income, I don't think they suffer for being part of the team and learning how to make it together. Nor do I feel in the end that my children suffered for having to go to public universities. So I think if we can be not so sucked in by the consumer society, that we become that we lose a sense of trust that our children, if we've given them a sound Christian foundation, developed in them values of concern not only for themselves but others, we may be giving them something even more important than the elite education. I think we can. My own experience is that if you have to do with less, you'll find some creative ways of doing it. You had a comment you wanted to make. Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering, by listening to each one of them, of you, does it really make that much of a difference how much you spend, how much you spend for yourself, for your family? I don't think it does. I really don't think it does at all. Because even if all of us would give up most of our money and only keep enough for our own survival, okay, we still would not solve the world hunger, the world problem. It's not enough. We must have the statistics. The difference, the number of people who are poor and ignorant and suffering from hunger today, is so much. The number is immense compared to the few of us who are well and comfortable. So what would really make the difference if you would, give up? You see, if you give up in buying comfortable hiking shoes, instead of buying a good one, you are going to buy a cheaper one. You know what's going to happen? You are going to go in a hike and you are going to break a leg,
Let me give you a quick response. There are 1 billion people with annual incomes of $50 a year. There are close to a billion Christians around, probably quarter of them at least are reasonably affluent. If those 250 million Christians could easily spare $200 a year, so we could easily double the annual income of the poorest one quarter of the world's people.
I think that in what you said, you lift up some interesting statistics, which you can probably give us the numbers of. When you point out that it's a small number of us who are affluent and or even comfortable, and huge numbers who are among the poorest of the poor, there we have described the problem.
Yeah.
The percentage of in the world that own the majority of the wealth, yeah, as compared to the percentage of those.
Yeah, and that is another thing too. You see, for instance, this is just a little example. When the Johnsons came in with this double Sunday or whatever it was, and I said, well, we are talking about the World 100 here you are. These two people, I love them very, very much. They are my family now. Their son married my daughter. And I was only kidding, but, and remember, you answered no, eat it and enjoy it. The thing is that if we educated people and we have a means to, we have to be satisfied and happy with ourselves, because the more you study, the more you learn, the more you know the problems in the world, okay? And you have certain needs that because of what you are, it doesn't mean if it's okay for you to eat a little bit more because you do have the means, and but you are not causing the problem in the world, because if you are happy with yourself, this is the progress in the country. This is the progress in the world. If you wouldn't make yourself miserable because the poor are miserable, then the progress would stop in the world. Okay. And then it would be even worse. Understand, you have to
yes.
be.
We hear you. Is there anybody who has a different view about that? Several do. Let's start with.
Well, I think it goes back to that one little cliche almost, but it rings true. It's better to light one candle than to curse the darkness. I think we can feel so overwhelmed that we think, well, what can we do? What can one person do? And yet, I know I can't change the whole world system, but I know that I can do my little concrete thing. Maybe right now in Orange County, or I can give a few dollars for World Hunger, or whatever the case is. And then I can't go around wringing my hands with guilt all the time and not appreciating God's blessings in my life either. I think I hear her about and clear on that one too.
All right. Yes.
Well, I did a study of what I could do a little bit about 6 years ago, and the figures I came up with was that the developed nations consume 66% of the world's resources, and the rest of the world only gets a third of them. And if we would eat differently, not eat so much beef, which it takes 10 acres to produce enough beef for one normal American eating all the beef that they want for 1 year, when a half an acre will feed a person in grains, that we are consuming more of the world's resources. The giant corporations go down to South America and have them raise beef to be sold in the United States at a cheaper rate, and the people down there are starving because they can't grow the food down there because they're growing beef for us, or coffee beans, or, you know, there's also economic trade problems that would develop if we stopped doing all the importing. But we are consuming more than our share in the world. And I think we need to really change our lifestyles so that we aren't consuming beyond and taking from the third world, and that's what we're doing a lot.
Well, this is so ironic also, because we have so much to eat and we're eating the wrong thing, and we are one of the countries with more problem, health problems, you know, heart attacks and cancer and all, because we're eating too much of the wrong thing.
It's now 10, and so we would say formally the forum's at an end, but you're welcome. So don't feel embarrassed about leaving, but continue the discussion for as long as you want. Yes.
We've formed a hunger circle in our church this year and have been studying this problem in depth. And one of the greatest things I've found is that the more you become aware of the problem, the more things you find you can do. It does look overwhelming. It looks like, gosh, there's so much. What little bit can we do? But when you really start reaching out there and trying to find out, there are an awful lot of things you can do. And you find more and more. There's so much being written, and there's so many groups. We found so many local groups. We found a school nearby where teachers in our church were working, where the children were hungry. They were so hungry they couldn't learn. And the teachers in that school started a food program, which we are now working with and contributing food during our the Sunday that we have communion. The church contributes food in connection with that. And we're doing that by the study too.
And this is one of the most affluent counties in the country.
We thought, what can we do? We're in such an affluent area. The poor do not come to our church. Well, I found they do more than I thought. But it's just amazing what you find out you can do. We've found other funds that we can give to. We found an emergency a group that's working out of a woman's home near to us where people can come just to get emergency food. I didn't know it was there. I mean, we just aren't aware of these things until we start reaching out to find out about them. But they're there. There are people right in your neighborhoods who are hungry, who don't have enough food. And you can find out about them. And you'll find that there's a lot of agencies that are approved agencies that are working with these people. You don't have to start your own groups. You just have to be aware of them and connect with them. And there's an awful lot can be done.
Thank you for sharing. Yes.
There are also advocacy programs like Bread for the World.
Right.
Just take a few minutes each month when you get the newsletter and write to your congressman and say that these programs should be supported for the hungry.
And your church can make an offering of letters where they
right.
they deal with that too, which is very helpful.
Yes.
My point isn't so much on the statistical level or even group organized, which is all great, you need that, but just on a personal level, where Jesus praised the widow for giving her one mite, you know, when we ask, well, what good can I do, you know, and there she gave everything she had, and it's simple as that, you know, as far as that goes.
If you've done it to the least of these.
Yeah.
On the Bread for the World. A good Lutheran that happens to head up that organization. All right, Simon. Wonderful, brother.
Yes, sir.
If we are such magnificent consumers, just as a suggestion, maybe we should all adopt a hypothetical another member of the family, so that when we have to buy a pair of shoes for one of the kids, then we should be placing the equivalent amount for storing up for the year or whenever. Or if one has to have a shirt, there's somebody else in the world that needs an awful set of the sun. Can we balance off a donation for one other person in the world?
That's an interesting challenge, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a good idea. Mm-hmm. Did everyone hear that?
You send them to college, though.
Send that guy to Sorbonne or
something.
But you know, there are political implications here too.
Before you want that, I just want to throw in one of the, you can do the same thing in terms of church construction. Because we could decide that if we do need a new organ or a new wing church and that costs X number of dollars, we raise twice that much and give that second amount for worldwide evangelism and worldwide relief and development, justice, empowering the poor.
Yeah, we are, in our church, we have a foster parent, we need a foster parent.
Right.
And we are restricted as far as the amount of money we can give this child, because if we gave them too much money, and we're only giving this child $25 a year, if we gave him $50 or $100 a year, which we could very easily do, that child would probably be earning more than the richest person in his entire village. So now there's that too. You've got to look into these programs to see just where you're heading on some of these things.
All that means is that you give that other money to an agency that is working on digging wells or new agricultural seeds, or whatever. There are lots of other things where there are needs.
But the point is well made that you have to meet the need with what's, I mean, small is beautiful.
Yes. Yes.
Don't overdo it.
Right.
Yeah.
You can't just
give
go
what
and
is
throw
needed,
money
not
at the
price. Just give.
Yeah. Yeah. And the solution is not a worldwide welfare system, for goodness sake.
No.
The ideal is to empower the poor to earn their own way.
You're back to education.
But it's also so that we aren't consuming their resources so they can't
square ourselves. When it seems like the problems are so huge that there's very little we can individually do except direct social kind of service, then it's important to remind ourselves as Lutherans that for the first time we're getting much more strongly into advocacy. Office of Governmental Ministry in the LCA, which the ALC is in partnership with now, where Lutherans are learning how to have political clout, is, I think, will allow us to get involved at where change can occur. And not just band-aids be applied.